This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Now, it's 15 degrees Celsius in Toronto, 60 Fahrenheit. I'm Jeremy Logan. News next hour on Zoomer Radio.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigobond. Joining me as usual in studio, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capitol, Toronto Maple Leaf, and a few other stops in between, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou.
Toronto Planets, too, Wally.
Good morning, gentlemen. What a great day.
The Toronto what,
Planets, Nets? Planets. Roller hockey.
Oh, you did some roller hockey, Lou?
I did do a little bit of roller hockey, yes.
And a little bit of ball hockey. Yeah, interesting career. Anyways, gentlemen, we now know where most of the stones have landed. Our new general manager is Brad Treliving. Kyle Dubas is in Pittsburgh. Sheldon Keefe's still the coach. Austin Matthews hasn't been signed. Let's have a little recap on that. Plus Vegas and Florida started off the Stanley Cup finals last night. And we're going to have on the show today Michael Tracos to chat about all things hockey. And later on in the hour, talk to our good friend Butch Carter. We'll talk some basketball. Naz, Kyle Dubas is now with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
7 years.
7 years. Brad Treliving is now the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Let's talk a little bit closer to home first. A little bit of a discussion about what you foresee in the future here for Brad Treliving.
I hear he's a good guy, and I think he'll do very well here. He's good with the media, and I think he'll do extremely well here.
And Kyle Dubas in Pittsburgh.
How did he get 7 years?
Wow.
Wow, he must be really smart.
Well, you could give him credit. His job is to negotiate. His job is to negotiate contracts with agents, and looks like he did a pretty good job of negotiating his own contract.
No wonder he went back to the lease with a counter offer. He had the other one in his pocket, right?
Well, it's interesting. There's no proof that he had it in his pocket, and if he did, they got something called tampering, which I'm not even sure that allegation's been made. I think people are sort of staying away from that because it just seems early in 1 week it's Toronto or nothing, and then very quickly thereafter he became the most wanted man in the NHL apparently, Lou.
Well,
and I say that not necessarily disparagingly. I mean, I made the comment a few shows back that he was going to be in high demand. So yep. That's not necessarily a disparaging remark. He was in high demand, obviously, and the good people at Fenway Sports in Pittsburgh are, some pretty bright business people, and they thought Kyle Dubas is the man for them. So. God bless them, and and congrats to Kyle. Good for him.
Well, hey,
go ahead, Lou.
He did a great job here in Toronto. He put a pretty good team together. Mind you, it helped with the draft, and it just goes to show you that what we talked about a few weeks ago is that he knew what was happening. He wanted to put as much pressure on Brendan Shanahan as he possibly can. He wanted more power. He got 7 years out of Pittsburgh. And I think it's fair enough that he wasn't going to get 7 years here. Now with Pittsburgh, he's got Malkin, Letang, goaltending problem, and Crosby on a downswing of 38 years. So, you know, he's going to have to really work his tail off to turn that franchise around when they're gone. And I can't see them. They haven't got that much talent. So other than those three guys, he's got big shoes to fill there with Hextall and Brian Burke leaving.
Yeah, but certainly.
It's supposed to show you, if you put a gun to Brendan Shanahan's head, it's more or less I'm walking. And he wanted more power here in Toronto. He wanted probably more term. And Shanahan said, sorry, we can't give you that because you're taking work away from me. So
yeah, I mean, if the Leafs had have given Kyle Dubas 7 years at those kind of numbers, we probably would have said the Leafs are crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any historic parallel of any GM or coach. Maybe Mike Babcock might be the exception. He got seven, didn't he?
He's back too,
and he's back in Columbus.
Yeah.
But you know, throwing around those long-term contracts for GMs, I can't. Maybe we'll ask Trakos. I can't think of any example where a GM has ever gotten that length, that kind of term. Naz, can you
think
of anybody?
No.
I mean, there probably is, and you know, we'll probably get corrected by somebody. But you know, that just seems inordinate, Lou.
Well, you got to remember, he is president of Hockey Ops. He's not the GM.
Okay, fair enough.
You have a list of all the names.
Okay, so he's got 7 years to overlook the whole situation in Pittsburgh and Wilkes-Barre. Obviously, he did say he is going to be the GM or the interim GM at the draft. I'm not sure if he can be at the table or not, like Troy Living can't be at the Leaf table.
Yeah.
So it's almost two different shoes here that he's putting on. He's in no hurry to hire a GM, and he doesn't have to hire anybody with experience because he's the one that is going to be looking over the whole organization.
Well, he cleaned house a little bit over in Pittsburgh already. I mean, you know, several people there have already been told that their services are no longer required by the Pittsburgh Penguins. And you got to think that Jason Spezza is there's a, you know, the quickness of how he resigned from the Toronto Maple Leafs certainly leads to the logical inference that he's a Kyle Dubas supporter, and that I'd be surprised if there's not a job waiting for Jason with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Naz, is he GM, assistant GM? Where do you see Jason landing?
Do you agree with my premise?
Yeah,
he doesn't have the experience as a general manager, so I think that'll take some time.
Yeah, but I can't see. I appreciate the fact that Kyle is the president of hockey operations, but I can't see him giving up the role of making GM type decisions. That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, he's going to be the GM there in all but name only, I would think.
He's got Shanahan's job, basically. That's what he has.
Yeah, but we've never understood the.
But Shanahan made decisions there too, you know, in Toronto for sure.
I'm not so sure he made decisions or vetoed decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, apparently, Lou, apparently that was one of the issues with Kyle, is that there was some moves that he wanted to make that Brendan wasn't too thrilled about. And quite frankly, over the course of the last year, it seemed like the Kyle-Brendan relationship deteriorated.
Well, it really did deteriorate, because if you looked up in the box during the games, Brendan was never... This year was never in the box with him. It was always Dubas with Jason Spezza there. But the one thing that we have to think, guys, here, Mike Sullivan's only got I'm not sure, Naz, you could probably, since you did last week, he's only got another year or two. And he did go publicly and say that he wanted more say in the buildup of the roster that they have in Pittsburgh. So I'm not sure if Dubas met with Sullivan also. What's going to happen there. And let's not put Sheldon Keefe out of the quest, equation yet, because if Sullivan does leave after a year, that he's got
keeps going to Pittsburgh.
He doesn't get along with Dubas, right?
Yeah.
He might just leave, and Sheldon Keefe is going to step in.
Well, I think Sheldon Keefe's going to, you know, like every other coach, like every other general manager, you know, he's going to assess his, he's going to see what contractual, where he is in terms of his contract. He's going to have his discussions with his general manager. He's going to assess his market value. He's going to assess his demand for services, for his services. He's going to make a decision, as he should, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, he's got an obligation to maximize, you know, his career and his pay and whatever, his obligation to his family. So he'll make his whatever decisions he needs to make in the context of whatever the time, at the time that he has to make those decisions. But Naz, Sheldon Keefe...
I believe Sullivan has 3 years left.
3 years?
Yeah.
But very quickly, before we go to break, this is a conversation we're going to keep going with Michael Tracos. Sheldon Keefe, I would have said a week ago, his future with the Toronto Maple Leafs is uncertain. I don't think you can say that anymore, based on what's been said, based on preliminary remarks from Tree Living. It looks like Keefe's going to be going to training camp with this team.
Yeah, with the 2-year extension. I think.
Yeah. I can't see them going into the season without some extension of some kind, Lou. If they're going to keep him, and it looks like they're going to keep him.
Well, lots of coaches out there.
Yeah.
Right. So he's the one guy that they can replace and not really have any stabilizing effect. It's going to come down to who's going to become available within the next month, and if they're happy with the direction that they're going in, and we'll have to see what Matthews, Nylander, and Marner are going to say on whether they want.
Yeah,
if they want Sheldon Keefe back.
Yeah, I don't know. How long's Tree Living been on this job now?
4 days.
4 days. Okay. So I don't know if he's had the time to have the discussions with Brendan. I got to think he's an important topic on the list, whether they've made that decision or not, whether they're still evaluating. We don't know. But I can't see them waiting a month to deal with Sheldon Keefe. They've got to be fair to him. If you know, they've got to make a decision, I would think.
That's going to happen this week.
This week, yeah. They've got to make a decision on him. I mean, the early signals indicate that he's going to be around.
Yep, 3 years.
Why would you say they have to make a decision?
Because
it's
they don't have to, but it's not fair. You know, if you're going to keep him, you keep him. You give him a contract extension if that's what you want to do, or you give him an opportunity to secure some employment somewhere else.
You got lots of time to employ because of the draft at the end of the month.
Yeah, I mean,
coaches are.
And then you got to start. And then you got to start looking at other coaches that are available, right?
So you're absolutely right there.
You know,
lots of them around.
And then you know, then they got to start making some decisions with respect to this particular, not just the coaching decision. If Keefe stays on, haven't they lost a couple of guys behind the bench assisting?
They lost one, Craver.
Yeah, Cranberry's in Washington.
Yeah, he went and he was a key part of this team. So you got to start thinking about replacing him. And you know, if there's any other assistant coaches you want to have a look at, those decisions have to be made.
I'm told they met twice already, so I think it's a done deal already.
That keeps staying.
Yeah, he's staying.
And it's the only issue is how long of an extension do you give him?
Two year extension.
You give him a short leash?
No, 3 years is enough.
And you see what happens. Anyways, this is a continuing discussion. I know that Michael Tracos is a big Kyle fan, so it should be an interesting discussion. We'll go to break, and acclaimed hockey writer Michael Tracos will be right back with him.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, and live video and audio streaming at zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, a good friend of ours, Michael Tracos. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
We're doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. Michael, we want to wish you congratulations. I know that you've gone on to another career opportunity. You're now the managing editor of Team Sites at the Hockey News. Tell us all about this this new opportunity.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. I've been, I think a lot of hockey fans, like a lot of hockey fans, have been a faithful reader of the Hockey News. Oh, well before I was a journalist, and even in my early journalism career, I was writing for the Hockey News. So it feels a bit full circle to come back there, and really launch what is going to be 32 team sites. Where if you're a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs, we've got a site for you. If you're a fan of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Dallas Stars, Edmonton Oilers, what have you, we've got the site for you. So I'll be managing that. I'll be doing some writing as well for the magazine. So just really excited to announce that, and perfect timing with the Stanley Cup final underway.
We certainly wish you the best. And you're talking about the Hockey News, and you've had it with you. I've managed to save a whole bunch of them from the mid 60s from when I still have them.
Is that right?
Yeah, huh? I just got some great ones from the mid 60s to the late 60s. So the Hockey News has been around forever. So all congratulations on that. It's an outstanding publication, and they found somebody good to take you on. Michael, listening to your Hockeyverse podcast, I know that you are, I don't know if I want to use the word fan, but you have a high respect for the services of Kyle Dubas. He's landed in Pittsburgh 7 years at a whole bunch of dough. How do you feel about that?
Well, I thought his heart was in Toronto, guys.
I thought it was Toronto. So did we.
I feel a bit taken here. maybe I'm naive. I took him at his word. But you know what? Let's be honest. I'm not shocked. I think part of the reason why Kyle parted ways so easily with the Leafs is because there were other opportunities, and whether it was going to be Pittsburgh or another spot in the NHL, he's known as one of the rising stars, and there was a lot of interest in him. So it might be a little surprising that he'd go from Toronto, where you're on the cusp of a team that's right on the doorstep of winning Stanley Cup, to a team in Pittsburgh where, let's face it, their best days are behind them. I know they still have Crosby, they still got Malkin, but Crosby, last time I checked, is 36 years old. Malkin, I think, is, 37. Letang's now coming off of two strokes. This is a team that might not even make the playoffs in the next, like, next little run here. They've missed the playoffs for the first time, I think, in what, since Crosby was a rookie. So, you know, Dubas has got his hands full. I don't think it's going to be an easy fix. Doesn't look like there's an appetite for moving on from that core. And, you know, it's a team that's traded draft picks and prospects in pursuit of a championship over the last, like, you know, 5 to 10 years. So the cupboard's bare. You got an aging core, and you're bringing in Kyle Dubas. I'm curious to see who gets the GM role. I'm also curious to see what sort of magic he can pull out of his hat.
Are you surprised that Mike Babcock coming back to Columbus, Michael?
No, not really surprised. The team surprises me. Geographically, it makes sense. Mike Babcock's heart's still in Michigan. Michigan and Columbus are not that far away. So I think this is a chance for him to stay close to his son, who I think might still be at the might be doing his schooling still in Michigan. I think Mike wanted to stay in that area. But that team surprises me. I thought if Mike Babcock was going to come back to the NHL that it was going to be a team like the Rangers, where they might just be a good coach away from winning a Stanley Cup or at least competing for one. Columbus, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs next year or the year after. So I'm a little confused as to what his motivation is, aside from just getting back into the league. That being said, it's not that dissimilar of a situation than it was when Mike came to Toronto and had a young roster and, you know, was able to shape them into a playoff contender year after year after year. So if he can do to Columbus what he did to Toronto, the Blue Jacket fans are going to be happy, but that is a tough division. Might be the toughest division looking forward with how good New Jersey is, how good the Rangers are, Carolina. There's just a lot of really good teams there that Columbus is going to have to leap over.
His motivation might be he's no longer going to be paid by the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, you know, certainly, you know, I'm sure that factors into it. Lou, I'll turn it over to you.
You know what? I think it's a great place for Babcock to loop because really it's the same reason why Goudreau went there. He can walk around the streets and nobody's going to know who he is. It's a college town. And he can more or less put a stamp on the organization, on the hockey team. And he's got a good start there because he's got a good bunch of young guys. He's got a goaltender that can stop the puck. I couldn't see him going to New York because there's too much happening in New York or a bigger city. He went to Anaheim his first year. He took over from Brian Murray and took him to the finals. So I thought it was a great move by Columbus.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Lou. Where Mike Babcock is in his career, like when you're talking about going to Anaheim, you got to remember that was his first NHL head coaching job, and then spent however long he was in Detroit, where he really solidified himself as the best coach in the NHL. I'm just kind of surprised that he'd go take a lesser role. When I think of Mike Babcock, I think bright light, big city, the guy that steered Canada to multiple gold medals. And it's just, like the Mike Babcock ego, it walks through the door before Mike Babcock does. So, go to Columbus where he's not going to be recognized, and it is not, it's not Toronto, it's not even Buffalo, it's not even Detroit in that regard. So, that's the part that takes me by surprise, and the fact that, this team has, say what you want about their future. And I love what Jarmo Kekäläinen has been able to do. Not only in attracting Johnny Gaudreau, but I think as a player analyst, I think this guy is great. Really strong drafts, but it's still a team that's, I think, 2 or 3 years away.
The other aspect of it might be there may not have been any other offers forthcoming around the rest of the league. Babcock's
and that might be it. And I think Joel Quenneville is probably going through a similar situation where, beggars can't be choosers at this point.
He's been out of it for so long that, he's an offer comes along. You better think twice before, because you don't know if the next one's coming.
Possibly. And this is a chance for him to rebuild that reputation.
Yeah.
A lot has been said about Mike Babcock since he left Toronto, been labeled a bully, someone who's a toxic head coach. I think That's probably too harsh an assessment in my mind. Yep. But this is a chance for him to rebuild that reputation.
Let's take it a little bit closer to home. We've got a new general manager here. I want to compliment you, Michael, on a great interview you did with Eric Francis the other day on your Hockeyverse podcast. Eric, of course, does his work out in Calgary, and you know, I wasn't sold on Brad Treliving coming to do the Toronto job, but after listening to your podcast and your interview with Eric Francis, he shed and I highly encourage our listeners to listen to it. Shed a different light on Treliving. Different context brought us a little bit more up to speed in terms of his accomplishments, his character, and his attitude. And certainly did a great job. Brad did a great job at his opening interview. If you can go back to the interview with Eric and perhaps share with our listeners some of the really good points that Eric Francis highlighted about Brad Treliving and why he's potentially a really good fit in Toronto.
Well, you know, the one thing that Eric really hammered, and I think it gets overlooked when talking about, you know, general managers, is that this guy in Treliving is just character. He is a solid guy. This is the kind of person where, like, I can picture myself having a beer with Brad Treliving. The one thing that he kept saying was, Brad walked away from the job in Calgary because of what happened to Daryl Sutter. And say what you want about Daryl Sutter as a head coach, Brad stuck by him, and he stuck by him through thick and thin. And if Daryl wasn't coming back, then Brad didn't feel right coming back. And I think that speaks volumes. Well, when you're running a team, it's not just about acquiring players, drafting players, trading for players, or signing free agents. I know that numbers game really comes into it, but it is a people game as well, and you have to know the personnel. And to have a GM that, you know, unflinchingly caring, and someone who, you know, stands up for what he thinks is right and moral, I think that's going to pay dividends. I'm not going to say it's similar to Lou Lamoriello, because Lamoriello came with his own kind of culture, but it's not unlike that scenario where, you know, you had Lou's rules. I think there are certain Brad moral rules that he kind of abides by. And, you know, maybe that's a good thing for sort of a cold, hard corporation like the Toronto Maple Leafs, is to have a guy that, you know, maybe can bring a little bit of that small town Western kind of mentality to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And aside from all that, you look at Brad Treliving's on trade record, and a lot of people are going to point to the Matthew Tkachuk trade and say, well, he really blew that one. Well, let's reverse this a little bit. Matthew Tkachuk told Brad Treliving that he was not going to re-sign with the Calgary Flames, no matter how much money got thrown at him. So was really put in a tough situation. And not only that, he told him, I'm only going to go to five teams. Now, of those five teams, I think two or three of them said that we're not interested in bringing on Matthew Tkachuk because the trade demands were just going to be too high. So really backed into a corner when you really think about it. And when you're talking about two options, I think one was in St. Louis, where the return was going to be not players, but just prospects and picks that were going to set Calgary back a number of years in terms of a rebuild, or making that trade for Jonathan Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar, and a first overall or first round pick. Well, at the time, everyone was saying Brad Treliving should get the GM of the Year award for what he was able to do.
No kidding.
And it's only now that we see that Tkachuk led the Panthers into the playoffs, and not only the playoffs, but the Stanley Cup final, that everyone's saying, oh, wow, this hasn't worked out for Calgary. But, yeah, Calgary still finished with more points than Florida did. And if not for Pittsburgh losing a game down the stretch, you know, Florida could very well be out of the playoffs right now. And we could be looking at that trade a lot differently. So I think the Leafs are in good hands. They got an experienced GM, and they got one that cares. So it is a win in my mind.
Is Sheldon Keefe going to be the coach of the Leafs, Michael?
I keep debating this. I keep going back and forth. You asked me today. I say I think he starts the season, and he's got the shortest leash possible. Ask me tomorrow, and I might say, you know what, I can't see him coming back. It's going to be really difficult, because I say a short leash. Can you picture that Toronto Maple Leafs team doing anything but finishing one or two in the division? Like, you could be coaching this team and they're probably going to finish one or two in the division. So I don't know how you evaluate Sheldon Keefe until the playoffs start. And by that point, it's going to be too late to pull the trigger on making a move. So I heard a lot of good things that Trevor Living said about Keefe in terms of, you know, turning this team into a more defensively sound team. I think we all saw that. End of the day, Keefe's going to get judged on what the team does in the playoffs, as is the rest of the roster. So it might just be a wait-and-see approach. And, you know, like you said, or like I said, if you're asking me today, I think Keefe starts the season as the head coach, and they go from there, just because I don't see that many options that are probably that much better than Sheldon Keefe. And the other thing to kind of look out for is who replaces Spencer Carberry as the assistant coach of the Leafs. If it's a guy like, I'm not saying they're going to hire a Joel Quenneville or someone of that ilk, but that very well could be the next next head coach of the Maple Leafs.
Would they hire Bruce Boudreau, Michael?
That's what I'm saying. I could see a scenario where Bruce is maybe running the power play for the Leafs, and you know, you get into November or December, or you want to make that change right before the playoffs, and maybe you throw Gabby behind the bench as the head coach. But I can't see Keith losing the job outright. I could see him maybe gaining an assistant coach that is basically going to be next in command.
Lou?
Let's talk about what went on last night. What did you think of the game last night? Again, Florida shenanigans in the first period and at the end of the game. And who do you think is going to more or less have is Dubas going to be looking for as a GM in Pittsburgh? Like, what are the names out there?
Okay, let's go back to the game last night. I thought Vegas is going to give Florida a match for their money. They did something that Toronto wasn't doing in their series against the Panthers, which is putting bodies in front of Bobrovsky. You know, go figure, guys. You put bodies in front of the net, and the goalie can't see the puck coming at him. So that's a good Vegas team. It's a deep one. Their defense might be the best defense in the NHL right now. Jack Eichel's playing well, and you got those original misfits like Marchessault, William Karlsson, and Shea Theodore, who are just, you know, they're outstanding players. So I keep going back and forth as to who I think is going to win the series. I think we're in for a long series, and those shenanigans aren't going to stop. I think game two, Florida is going to come out hitting even more. Back to Dubas. I'm really curious to see who he brings in as GM. I don't think it's going to be a legit GM. I could see it somehow being a guy like Jason Spezza, where he's sort of learning on the job, and it allows Kyle to kind of keep both hands on the wheel and, you know, basically be the GM and the president while you've got another guy sort of learning on the job. I don't think he's going to bring in a guy who's done the job before. So, yeah, I still think this is Kyle's team to run. And no surprise that Jason left Toronto to go with Kyle, because I think that's the position that he's going to be taking.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that point. I can't see Dubas relinquishing the GM duties. Not yet, anyways. He's got to bring. It's almost like a Lamoriello Dubas situation from way back. As he's going to bring somebody in to learn on the job, and then turn over the reins. Austin Matthews, apparently that's job number one for our new general manager. What's your sense of whether they're going to be able to get this deal done? I just hope, you know, that shoe's got to drop. They got to get the deal done. It's $13-14 million, probably a little south of 14 or a little north of 14. They just might as well get it done and get on with it. Your thoughts, Michael?
Yeah, it's going to get done. There's no scenario in my mind where Austin doesn't have a contract by the time training camp starts. You know, the only question is, I don't even care about the money. I think whatever money he wants, he's going to get. It's going to come down to term. Are the Leafs going to be able to sign this guy for a term that extends past 5 or 6 years? And that is going to be the challenge, because I'm hearing that Austin, it's been reported already, that he's looking at a term of probably no more than 3 years, so that he sets himself up for an even bigger payday 3 years from now. So that's going to be the challenge that Brad Treliving is going to be under, is, you know, sign Austin Matthews to a number that you can live with and a term you can live with, because, you know, the next guy you got to worry about is Mitch and then possibly William Nylander. But Yeah, if the Leafs can get Matthews at a term of 6+ years, I don't think anyone's going to care what the dollar amount is, because that cap eventually is going to have to go up.
The Leafs have 10 unrestricted free agents. Which ones stay and which ones go, Michael?
Oh, now you're...
because they're not going to have any money left after they pay Matthews.
Honestly, I think Luke Shen might be their most important UFA right now with what he was able to do next to Morgan Rielly last year. But, yeah, I think this is a chance for Brad Treliving to really put a stamp on the team through the free agency. The core is set. It doesn't look like he wants to change that core, but when you're looking at close to a dozen UFAs, it really gives him an opportunity to kind of shape that roster by getting maybe a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier, especially on the back end. So kind of curious to see who stays, who goes. But for me, the most important one right now is Luke Shen.
Michael, we're going to wish you a good rest of Sunday. We're going to thank you so much for joining us. We're going to remind our listeners about your new role as the managing editor of Team Sites, the Hockey News. We look forward to all of that great work. And are you carrying on with your podcast, The Hockeyverse?
100%. Okay. The numbers are growing and growing and growing. Of course, I'm continuing. I'm glad that you guys are listening.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, to all our listeners, if you want a little bit of insight into Brad Treliving, Michael and did a fantastic interview with Eric Francis the other day. I highly encourage our listeners to listen to it. Michael, you know how much we appreciate your time. We thank you very much, and we'll probably catch up with you in the fall.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Keep well. Michael Tracos.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. We're going to take it to break, and we'll be right back. We're going to have Butch Carter. Let's talk a little bit of basketball.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian, authentically Italian.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. Live video and audio streaming at www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour the coach, former coach of the Toronto Raptors, Butch Carter. How are you doing this morning, Butch?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. We just had a spirited discussion about Kyle and Brad Treliving, and I think I'm going to send a suggestion to HBO. Now that succession has wrapped up, and maybe they should put some cameras on the Penguins and the Leafs this year, and that might be an interesting series. Before we get to basketball, we really want to do some basketball. Any comments on what's transpired in Leafland and Penguin land in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I mean, the Leafs basically had a mutiny, and that mutiny has led Tim to go to get the position he wanted, where he had more authority. Nothing's really been mentioned about that. Dubas used a very powerful agency, Wasserman, to move him around. Quite unusual for positioning for a coach in for the Leafs, but that's how it went through. The Raptors has been, I think, pretty quiet on what they're going to do. But Masai and his whole team belong to an agency, Warren Legarry, and normally they only hire within Warren Legarry clients. So be interesting to see if they're going to tear it down. I think it basically would be defined by if they can do a draft day trade and move Pascal. If they can move Pascal, they'll tear it down and go with Younger, and that may decide on who they want as coach. But they don't need a coach in the draft room the way currently they're structured in the front office.
I want to dig into that one a little bit deeper, because you're seeing I want to pick your brain a little bit more at possibly different contenders for Raptors coach depending on certain moves that they make. Can you go a little bit into more depth with that? Who do you see as the contenders to be the Raptors coach, and what shoes have to fall to make certain contenders rise to the top of the heap, Butch?
Well, he's got to decide if he wants to move up his coach from Europe. So I think that, you know, one of your contenders is always, you know, who do you have internally that you trust? The reality is that he knows he's in no man's land. He doesn't have a group that's good enough to win. Pascal isn't a big enough star. So I think internally you got to at least have one candidate, maybe two, that know the guys. Like I said, Warren Legarry controls the president and GM of 14 teams. And historically, the Raptors have been run by a Warren Legarry agency clientele. Brian Colangelo was the first one in, then Masai. Masai has hired all Warren Legarry agency clients. So, you know, that's why you see Steve Nash. There's no other reason why Steve Nash should be considered to coach the Raptors. History is very clear. There hasn't been a great all-star former player that's been a great all-star head coach. And but, you know, people don't follow the analytics. They're basically into, let's hire someone that we know our relationship is good with. But I think it's really tough. A lot of people know that Masai is not the easiest person to work for as a coach. Nurse, you know, wiggled his way out. Nurse, again, hired a very strong agent. And I imagine that they had planned this a year before at least. But the dynamics I see on the Raptors is that it won't make any difference who they coach. Their player development is failing them. You have three players, Pascal, Scotty, and OG, that even though they're really good athletes, they're not well-rounded players. They're not what I would call defined basketball players. Yes, they're athletic, but when you look at the play-in game and the free throws that Scotty missed, you know, the game should have been won. If he's going to be a leader of that team, he's got to lead them in the toughest of times during the course of a game. So the fact that they're failing on defensive field goal percentage, defensive field goal percentage was clearly identifiable. When you take over any program as a coach, the first thing you have to do if your team is bad is find a way defensively to lower the defensive field goal percentage. Now, when you do that, it starts a chain reaction of good things for you. They miss more shots, you rebound more balls, and you play in transition. When you play in transition, you have a chance to be more effective because you're taking better shots on the high end of the shot clock. When they make shots and set their defense and you're shooting shots in the below 10 seconds, then your offensive field goal percentage is going to go down. So the fact that the Raptors right now are very poor on defensive field goal percentage and they're not really buffed out with a complete star at a position, and this has nothing to do with money. How does a guy play against the best teams? Those are the only stats that are important because of the constant empirical number of 1,230.
Butch, when you were with the Raptors, what kind of approval process happened when you needed to make a trade with MLSC?
Well, I was able to negotiate a deal with them. They, you know, historically, before I got there, every deal had to be run upstairs. And I negotiated a deal with Grunwald that give us our salary cap, and we can do the deals as long as we're in within the salary cap. So my situation was I had no one upstairs on the boardroom that knew anything about NBA basketball. So why was I going to allow the question of who we're going to take go to them? And it was basically poison in the well. I explained to them at that time we were, I think, third or fourth to last in defensive field goal percentage. When I took over, there were two hypercritical issues that had to be fixed. Our defense had to be fixed. Our rebounding had to be fixed. And the third one was the situation where they had to approve every deal had to be fixed because you're basically going to take it to them, and then they were going to walk around and ask the people, like the scouts, like, what do you think? So it really wasn't a good situation because there was no one experienced at the top, and Glenn was trained as a lawyer. So the relationship Glenn and I had was great because I would explain to him, and I was, at that time, I'm running the first analytical model, I would show them. So, you know, if you go back as an example, we needed to rebound the ball if we made them miss. And we were very poor, but we traded. We defined five of the top rebounders on a per-minute basis, and we went and got Oakley. Glenn went and got Oakley, Kevin Willis, and we eventually got Antonio for a very bad draft pick that we traded for. So we drastically improved our ability to rebound. Those rebounds led to us being able to fast break with players like McGrady and Carter, and we became more efficient. So, you know, the whole thing of right now, the way it's structured, Masai's got it structured right. You know, he can go and do his deals. And, yes, as a courtesy, he has to report to the board. But when I was there, it was a huge mistake that everything had to be ran by the board. And at that time, think about it, they had zero experience with anything with the NBA. So now they have a proper structure that reports goes up the chain of command. But I don't think Masai has to. He gets a budget, and that's the way it should be. If you know what you're doing, give me the budget, and you can terminate me if I screw up the budget. But I knew at that time, analytically, I'm going to grab players that are effective on a per-minute basis. And when you grab players that are effective on a per-minute basis, it really rolls right into being effective during the season.
Let's have a little chat about the NBA Finals. We're past Game One. Denver looks like they're on a path to winning the Finals. Lou, if you want to engage with Butch here, let's have a little bit of chat about Denver and Miami. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, Butch. Watching the Denver LA series, I could not believe how physical that series was, and even the previous series that LA played with Memphis. Are the referees like hockey referees? They put their whistles away during the playoffs and just let them bang around, especially under the boards. And is there a better player? I'm not saying non-skilled, but is there a better player in basketball right now than Jokic?
Well, let's answer the first question. The main reason that my analytics are different than just general overall analytics is that I only evaluate how players play against the best players. And the reason for that, Lou, is because when you get in the playoffs, just as you defined, the officials don't want to blow the whistle. They're not trained to blow the whistle in the playoffs. They're trained to let them aggressively go do what they do. That's why Golden State, you know, when they've been good, have been so effective, because their skill guys were so good, you couldn't be physical with them. You know, Clay would score 40 points on you and take two dribbles. You know, Steph's running around, you can't get a hand on him. So you're absolutely correct. They're trained not to disrupt the game in the playoffs. And that's where people in basketball fail, because they'll get in the scouting room and say, oh, I like this player, but the player's not effective against winning teams. If he's not effective against winning teams, you can't get in the playoffs. So you're absolutely right on the first call. So I was having a discussion over a beer and a cigar the other night with a guy in the league, and he says, you know, Butch, how good is Joker? I said, Joker is the best Anglo player that's ever played in the NBA.
Wow.
Bar none, it's not even close. And he says, well, how can you say that? I said, because Joker has playing under the Eurostep. And I said, history is clear. If you had a player like Joker before, you'd put a taller player on him. He couldn't travel, so he couldn't see the rim. When they went to the Eurostep, Joker, now you put Anthony Davis on him. Anthony Davis loses his advantage of height because Joker can take a dribble and then Eurostep and score on the front side of the basket or the second side of the basket, because he can score with both hands. If you take Joker's efficiency and his ability to stat you out across the board, you go back and tell me what Anglo player has done what he's done in the history of the NBA, and I guarantee you he's going to be one. And maybe Larry Bird's going to be two.
Wow, you got him over Larry Bird. Wow,
that's
clear. Staggering.
Well, he's got two MVPs in the second and the third one. All right.
Yep.
Right, but as far as effectiveness, you can't stop him because he can Eurostep around him. So historically, in your coaching training, you just look. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen were affected defensively. Why? Because they were so much taller at the 2 and 3. They set the tone for let taller players move on the perimeter, because you couldn't see over them with the people they were defending. And so they were very effective every night. Joker's very effective every night because you can put a 7'5" guy on him. And what's he going to do? Dribble, Euro step, and kill him.
Yeah. Butch, before we've only got about a minute and a half left, and we'd be totally remiss if we didn't talk about the accomplishments of Jamal Murray. You know, the Nuggets look like they're on the way to the NBA title, and Jamal is, in historic terms here, is probably doing something a Canadian player has never done in the NBA, which is he will be an integral and the reason why his team won an NBA title. Like you had a comment on that, Butch.
Well, I mean, he's playing Robin in the Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
You know, that's who he is. And first met the kid, I think he was 15, 16 years old, and his dad and mom. And, you know, he's really an outstanding person to go with, you know, being an outstanding basketball player. You'd have to say him and Booker are the best, two of the best shooters that have ever come through Calipari from Kentucky. And it seems like he hasn't changed. He's overcome, you know, a really bad injury to do what he's doing. And he's still proud of being from Kitchener in Canada. So it says a lot about him and his family. You know, wish him success. He's been phenomenal when he needed to be. You want to talk about, you know, a player making shots in big moments. Those 23 he put in the fourth quarter in the Lakers, and they never double-teamed him. You know, it was just a perfect example. But hats off from all of us to the Murray family. I know they have to be excited, and it's worked out great. You're right. there are, I think there have been five other Canadians that have won or been on NBA teams with championships, but he'll be the first one that really has played a key role. Today's game is important. Miami just needs to get one to shake things up. But I have to say Mike Malone's done a really good job when he explained to his team the importance of they had to win game one because Miami had won game one in every series they played.
Butch, unfortunately, my producer's looking at me and he's shaking his head. Okay. So you know what live radio is like, Butch. We've extended our welcome a little bit too far past 10 o'clock, and only because the discussion was extremely fascinating and interesting. We thank you so much for sharing your basketball insights with us, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure.
Yep,
Butch Carter. Thanks, Butch. This week, Canadian Open Golf at Oakdale. I'm excited, Naz. We're way
so
past.
Yep.
You're excited. I give you the last word.
Have a good week, everybody, and you'll hear from us next week for sure.
Lou, thanks so much for helping us out this morning. We appreciate it. To all our listeners, have a fantastic week. We'll be back again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.